Hey everyone, Kevin Rose here. Welcome to Proof, a podcast dedicated to the NFT ecosystem. Here we interview artists and builders shaping the NFT space with a focus on high quality projects. Now, the episode you're listening to now was actually first released on my other podcast, Modern Finance, but as we decided to kick off this show, we wanted to re-release my previous NFT episodes here so that this feed represents all of the NFT content that I've created. Now, going forward, the Modern Finance podcast will have a focus on finance, and this Proof podcast will have all of the NFT content. If you're a fan of all things blockchain, you'll want to subscribe to both shows. So with that, enjoy the show. Quick update from us over at MoFi. We have successfully hired a part-time newsletter co-author. He's going to help me put together a bi-weekly newsletter that tracks all of my favorite happenings in the world of crypto. If you want access to that, it's completely free. Head on over to modern.finance and you'll see a newsletter sign-up link in the top header. Now, as far as episodes go, we continue to produce one new episode per week. I'm loving this release schedule. It's getting a bunch of great content out to all of you. And I put these episodes into a few different buckets. So you're going to see episodes about new cryptocurrencies, new coins, new NFTs. I want to have some interviews with some of the artists out there. Of course, we'll have experts back on the show to talk about industry trends. And then lastly, something new but very, very important is interviews I consider to be foundational knowledge. And these are trends before they go mainstream. And they're essential for you to understand. In today's episode is certainly foundational knowledge. It's all about the rise of DAOs. These are decentralized autonomous organizations. This is without a doubt the hottest topic in crypto at the moment, the formation of self-governing entities that create a type of hive mind to accomplish tasks. It sounds crazy, but it's actually working. I'm a member of one of these DAOs called Flamingo DAO, which is a DAO dedicated to collecting NFTs. And today I have two of their founding members on the show. Now, as a collective, the DAO owns hundreds of works of art. I mean, we have 215 CryptoPunks, including an alien, 5 autoglyphs, a bunch of art blocks, and the list goes on and on. But even more impressive than the collection is how it's all organized. I say this because all these purchases were made as a collective decision in a decentralized manner. So these DAOs are absolutely something to pay attention to, and when they work, they're more nimble than corporations. They surface ideas bottom up versus a top down kind of more management style telling you what to do, which I think is a much better structure. So it's definitely something I wanted to put on your radar. It's gaining a lot of momentum right now and something we should all understand. So in this episode, we cover what DAOs are, how they operate, and actually how you can get involved with a lot of the new and up and coming DAOs that are just now getting off the ground. And of course, if I'm having two fellow flamingos on the show, I had to ask them about their favorite NFT projects as well. So with that, this is Priyanka Desai and Aaron Wright from Flamingo DAO.
Kevin Rose and his guests are not registered investment advisors. All opinions are Kevin's and his guests alone. Nothing discussed today should be relied upon for investment decisions, nor is it investment advice. This show is solely for information and entertainment purposes only. Please work directly with an investment professional.
Pri, Aaron, thank you so much for joining the show. Glad to have you guys here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So I'd love to start off with just chatting about your background. Like what brought you to the world of NFTs and DAOs?
So hey, everyone, I'm Aaron. I have a background in law and technology. I fell deep down the Bitcoin rabbit hole starting in about 2011. I was fortunate enough to play a small role helping to launch Ethereum, and I've just been completely fascinated ever since. I also happen to be an academic, so I began to really start to think deeply about all things blockchain, including DAOs and NFTs and a whole bunch of other things, and was fortunate enough to work with a number of great teams over the years. I actually was able to work with the team that looks like they are the ones that put together the first NFT. I was on the Namecoin blockchain and continued to work with other great teams like the folks at Consensus and Chainlink, and really just have been amazed at watching this entire ecosystem grow over the past X number of years. It's really been fascinating. So that's a bit about me.
Hey, everyone. I'm Priyanka. I've been with the OpenLaw team, I think, a little bit over 3 years now. But prior to that, I kind of started my post-college life in DC and on Capitol Hill for a few years, and kind of came in through Bitcoin just from more like a social political perspective, like kind of this interesting like currency unit that had, you know, the properties of divisibility, portability, and it wasn't backed by some sort of centralized party. So I thought that was interesting. Went to law school where I actually met Aaron and wrote a little bit about it. He actually introduced me to Ethereum pretty early on. Worked at R3 and the New York State Department of Financial Services, which is doing some of the bit licensing work. And then thereafter, quickly joined the Open Law team. And while I was in school, like the DAO, 2016 DAO hack happened. So pretty animated by DAOs and this notion of, you know, people organizing and online communities and, you know, tying that to some sort of value component.
Awesome. So you all were hanging out, chatting about this stuff. So can you actually spend a second talking about Open Law? What is that organization? Who started it? And what is it set out to do?
Yeah, sure. So Open Law is a project that I co-founded along with David Roon, who is an early developer on the Ethereum Java client. And really the concept around Open Law was to build what many view as kind of the last leg in the three parts that cypherpunks and a whole bunch of other folks have thought about when reimagining a commercial system. So the first kind of leg of that was Bitcoin, which was, you know, some sort of digital asset that can be transferable and tradable. The second one was a smart contracting based system or a system where you could place rules around digital assets and make something that looks a little bit like property or digital property. And then Open Law is a Ricardian contracting system. And the concept here was to kind of create contracts that are able to be interpreted by humans and also machines. And so we pulled together Open Law as an open source project following some research that I did as part of this book that I had the pleasure of co-authoring a couple years back that Harvard published, and began to try to take some of that theory and apply it in practice. So we have the ability to mirror out contracts and mirror them and have them rooted in smart contracts as well. And we've been applying that technology in earnest for DAOs and decentralized autonomous organizations. The concept being that these are kind of new forms of structures that probably will be the dominant structure of the internet age. And with this combination of Ethereum, a Ricardian contracting system like Open Law, and other digital assets, we can really push that forward and build up some really new, novel, interesting structures.
That's awesome. So when you all came together for Open Law, was the plan to ever actually take part in your own DAO? Or was it just like, hey, let's be a services company. There are going to be entrepreneurs and teams that need this type of work, and let's provide that. And is that something that you still offer today? If a DAO came to you and said, hey, I need help getting off the ground, setting up my smart contracts, do you offer those services as well?
Yeah, so we really did kind of view it as eating our own dog food. So when we put together Open Law, we began to think of different use cases where it could apply. We kind of explored and put together some early proofs of concept around NFTs, around having what we thought were pretty interesting systems like real-time transmission of taxes and a whole bunch of other use cases. And then we decided that the best application for them was in this emerging ecosystem of DAOs. So right now, we really put together a network of curated DAOs. A couple examples there are the Lao, Flamingo DAO, and now Neptune DAO. And there's a whole bunch more that are planning or are in planning and soon will come out. And we've also been building some enhanced smart contracting tools to make the creation of DAOs easier. So I think at some point, we'll get to the possibility of having more turnkey solutions. But for right now, we're playing a heavy role in kind of curating and building out this initial DAO network.
So I would love to get both of your takes on what is a DAO, meaning that, you know, traditionally we would think, okay, I can just go form a C Corp and I can have shareholders, or, you know, if I want more of a partnership style, I can just put together an LLC and we can all have, you know, a piece of that LLC. Why are people turning to DAOs and how do they differ from those other two more corporate?
Yeah, well, I think a corporation is kind of a vestige of the industrial age. It's magnificent, right? Joint stock corporations have powered tremendous amounts of value across the globe. They've enabled, you know, massive enterprises and massive human endeavors to flourish. But I think it doesn't work that well on the internet. I think the native structure on the internet is something that's not as hierarchical as a corporation. And we need a new structure to begin to do that. And DAOs, I think, capture that broad mantle. You know, one way that we think about DAOs is a little bit like a subreddit with a bank account and some governance rules applied to it. You're able to kind of capture this collective energy of a group of people online that are interested in a particular topic or interested in a particular area. And not only can they talk and communicate with one another, like we saw in Web 1 and Web 2, but they could begin to take more proactive actions together. And that's what's completely fascinating about them. And over time, I imagine that we'll have organizations where humans are really pushing that forward, and possibly, you know, as the technology matures, more automated systems beginning to take over those processes, and humans are pushed a little bit more to the edges. And that's why people call them decentralized autonomous organizations. It's this notion that you can use software to begin to organize people's affairs and increasingly push, you know, human decision making towards the edges, and possibly, you know, fully towards the edges with more autonomous and automated systems.
Yeah, I'd like to just add to that too. I mean, it, like, just putting it in the context of the internet is really important, because I mean, corporations are one of humans' like greatest achievements in many ways. And I think extending that to this digital existence is really where DAOs come in. So I kind of see it as like a, you know, an extension of what we've seen in modern society just on the internet. I mean, we've seen in the information age of the internet, like the growth and the growth of the creator communities. I mean, you've seen that through community models such as like Reddit, even now in the audio place with Clubhouse and other tools that exist. I think DAOs really can add value and coordination to these existing models. And so in many ways, I think, you know, DAOs are just the natural extension of what we've built with the internet. And as Aaron mentioned, it really is like a bank account on top of one of these communities. So beyond just like making decisions and governing the group through proposals and such, it also is like a larger network effect. So if you're like a group of people and you want to, let's say, for example, in the case of Flamingo, curate around specific NFTs, you can imagine, you know, people coming together to make decisions on behalf of the DAO, but also themselves individually. And that kind of creates this like nice ripple network effect, which is very in line with how the internet operates too. So definitely kind of what we're seeing with the outer edges of the internet, and I think will become more commonplace.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about what you can enable and what needs to be a DAO versus what should just be a chat room full of people just talking about things, right? Like on the corporate side, when you think about voting, if you have a publicly traded company, you receive this old school printed document in the mail being like, cast your ballot. Like no one does that, right? Like maybe the big shareholders do, but the individuals don't care as much. It's not real time. It's just like super delayed. It's old school. So, you know, this, it seems like you're giving people a more real-time control over the resources and the decision-making. When does something need to be a DAO? For example, would you want Wall Street Bets to be a DAO? Would that be a bad thing? And would they even need to be?
Well, yeah, I think that they've indicated that they want to be a DAO, right? I personally think DAOs will be the endpoint for structures like Wall Street Bets, you know, a way for a group of people to come together, organize their affairs, not have necessarily one leader or no leaders at all. It becomes kind of like a hive mind to begin to process this torrent of information that we see online, something that's very hard for a handful of people to stay on top of, but a large group of people together can begin to parcel through all that information, begin to synthesize it, reach rough consensus around that, and then use blockchain technology, smart contracts, and more advanced tooling to begin to deploy that productively. So I think Wall Street Bets can't be a DAO now because they want to interact with the legacy financial system, you know, one that's getting routed through Robinhood or through other more traditional actors and players. But when you move to a world like crypto, where everything is digitally native and you do have the ability to begin to program and move around assets and take actions based on voting or collective decision making, you could imagine, you know, Wall Street Bets like structures rapidly emerging and actually competing just as well, if not better, and more traditional hedge funds or investment funds or a whole bunch of other vehicles. So I think that's where we're going. And crypto is kind of like the tip of the spear towards this broader trend to kind of capture this collective energy that we see online.
Collective energy is a tricky thing in that, gosh, I remember back to 2006 when I was like, when Dig was in its like heyday, we had 36 million people a month that were coming to it. And it was clear that very large groups of people were organizing for their own, you know, personal good. They were trying to promote like their own agendas on the front page, or, you know, doing very community negative but positive for themselves behaviors. When we live in this kind of anonymous world that DAOs can be, is there not some danger there around these people organizing to create harm?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is. There's always the potential for that. And that's where I think governance and good governance can come through. So just thinking about DIG as a general concept, and it was an amazing site, one that I heavily used, including in its heyday. One of the challenges was, I think in part, was that the community wasn't fully able to participate in decision-making related to, you know, how things were promoted up to the top, you know, what mechanisms or means could be used to boot folks that were potentially problematic to the ecosystem. So I wonder, and this is obviously a question and a hypothesis, but having more folks that are invested, you know, in a community, able to govern that community and able to make changes to that community to keep it healthy, could be a way to dampen some of those negative effects. You know, maybe secondarily, not having communities that are tens of millions of people large yet, but a little bit smaller, could be a way to sort through some of the positive benefits of this technology, while at the same time beginning to see and hopefully solve with some technical solutions some of the downside risks that I imagine could occur.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, some of these communities could go sideways. They could use the capital for nefarious purposes. I mean, no one is suggesting that may not, you know, just like with anything, really, there's always good and bad that could emerge based on new technology or new systems. I think what's at least nice about what the DAO structure is, there's a lot of fluidity in it. So if you are a community member and you feel like things are going sideways, or if the community is engaging and if their members engaging in inclusion or whatever could be going on, you could always just rage quit, but you could always leave, take any undeployed capital with you and either, you know, take that to another community, sell your interest in that DAO or whatever. I think that there's a lot of flexibility when you're talking about the digital world too.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you wanted to write it into the smart contracts, you could allow for there to be forking, right? You could say these users could go off and fork if there's ever a certain subset of people that want to just, I mean, that's kind of what rage quitting is, like you're taking your assets and potentially moving to a different project. Yeah, I think it's tricky. You're right. I guess a good example is actually subreddits, right? Because if you were to put every single person in Reddit in the same room, and this is the problem we had at DIG, you can't get that many people in the same sandbox. Obviously, they're there for different reasons and they're fighting. But if you can go and create a subreddit about knitting and get 100,000 really passionate knitters in there, like you're probably going to have an amazing community, right? As long as there's the right leadership and like the folks that are at least setting it up and kind of pruning it and making sure that it's staying healthy. So I would imagine that, do you believe that DAOs will ever get to any serious scale, or are we going to see a bunch of 1 to 500 person DAOs and that's, it's tricky. You see what I'm saying? Like the larger you get, the more potential there is for kind of bad actors.
Yeah, you know, we started with DAOs that are constrained to under 100 members, both for regulatory reasons, but also for practical and technical reasons. So when you start to scale DAOs to hundreds, if not tens of thousands, if not millions of people, it becomes harder and harder to keep assets secure. It becomes harder and harder to weigh in on certain things due to cost. So I do think we're going to get there, but I do think that there's going to need to be both technical enhancements and also a real clear understanding of what the appropriate governance structure should be before we get to that point. In my mind, it's a little bit like computing, right? Computers didn't start all that powerful off the bat, but over time, with technical enhancements and, you know, more familiarity, we've been able to just scale the amount of compute that we can process or computers can process. I think it's going to be the same thing with these organizations. And we have seen some DAOs that are quite large, right? The DAO, the initial experiment on the Ethereum blockchain, was a spectacular failure, but it had over 10,000 people that were participating in that experiment. And obviously that raised some technical issues, but if those technical issues were addressed, I imagine we could get to that point pretty quick. So I think we'll get there. And that's the kind of broad vision, right? We should have permissionless organizations that, where it doesn't matter where you live. All you need is an internet connection and, you know, a wallet of some sort so that you can sign things and attest to things, maybe a little bit of digital assets in that wallet so that you could contribute either capital or possibly only contribute your time. And if you are super into a particular topic, you can begin to take, you know, proactive and productive action with it. Maybe that's raising capital to buy an NFT. Maybe that's, you know, raising capital to help out a charity. Maybe that's banding together so that you can all work on something collectively and you can keep track of any benefits or work that's provided to this collective organization. These are things that I think people want to do online. They don't just want to sit in watering holes and chat, and they don't want to just go onto Twitter and you know, basically form a mob to take somebody down. They want to do more. They want to actually make a difference and hopefully benefit people and possibly also benefit themselves. So yeah. I think we're going to get there. I wouldn't be surprised if in, you know, a year or two, the tools get a lot better. I know we're working on some things to do that. And once the tools get better, I think you're going to start to see, you know, tens of thousands, if not millions of these DAOs flourish.
Yeah, and I kind of agree. The number is hard to fully quantify for what makes sense-based communities. Like as Aaron noted, you know, due to some of the constraints that we've dealt with, it's up to 100 members. But I mean, like been thinking about the number that makes sense for a lot of these communities, and you kind of go back to just first principles, like Dunbar's number of, you know, only 150 for, you know, one community to maintain stable, mm-hmm. you know, relationships with one another. You can imagine, I mean, even for me as like a Reddit user, you know, I was lurking on a lot of these things. I was kind of a passive contributor, a passive party that would float through different communities. So I think it's, if you have, you could have a community of 5,000 people, but if you have 150, 200 really active members, you can still kind of maintain that level of cohesiveness. So it kind of just more, I think the question more should be not how many people are in the community, but how many active contributors in a community. Yeah. I think if you have, you know, 1,000 active contributors, there's just too much noise, but yeah, if you can maintain it, you know, at a certain number, I don't know what that number is yet, it makes sense, even if people are kind of lurking in the background.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm curious, you mentioned a couple times now this 100 limit. One of the things that we see on crypto Twitter is just, you know, new DAOs popping up every single day. But I put DAOs in, you know, air quotes, because everyone is just saying, hey, I'm starting a DAO, everyone join. And I don't think that people fully understand what that means, other than just in some cases is people just saying it, and in others it's them wanting to do the kind of legal work to actually make it happen. What in your mind are you seeing a lot of that as well? Would you agree with that statement? And then what do people actually have to do to set one up legally?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're starting to move into this era of the DAO where the tools are getting strong enough and kind of this notion of pulling people together is beginning to gel and become more cohesive. So you're seeing a lot of experimentation related to it. And it feels a lot, to me at least, like early experimentation with Bitcoin and early experimentation with ETH and a whole bunch of other projects. And so there's some folks that are just ignoring all the rules and regulations that we have here in the United States and just pulling assets together, trying to make investments, distributing out profits, or interests in those entities. And I'm sure that some of those experiments are going to be super fascinating and grow quite large. At the same time, there's lots of challenging legal questions that emerge around DAOs. So if you're pulling together capital and trying to make a profit, at least here in the US and in most of Europe, you tend to be considered a partnership of some form. And if you are dividing up interest and providing that to folks, and those interests are being distributed by a handful of folks, you're likely going to run into potential securities laws issues too. Mm-hmm. And that's why on the Lao, Flamingo, and Neptune, we pegged our DAOs into a US legal entity. So they're organized, at least for now, as limited liability companies that really defer to the underlying smart contracts and the code to manage all the affairs. So if things go sideways, and we hope that doesn't happen and don't expect that to happen, but if it does, you can kind of lean back on the legacy legal system to mediate any problems or issues that can emerge. One of those constraints is if you are pooling together capital and trying to make a profit, and if there is a possibility, although we hope and have arguments for why interest in DAO should not be considered securities, there's certain limitations in terms of the number of members that you can have. And the most notable limitation is that you need to have under 100 folks, entities, persons that are part of it. And if not, you have to, or i.e. if you go over that 100-person limit, you have to start filing certain documents with the SEC and other parties. Right. So I think some of these experiments are going to be super fascinating, but I wouldn't be surprised, like we saw in earlier days for crypto, if you know some of the folks in charge of the financial regulation in the U.S. start looking at these and raising an eyebrow. So,
yes. Well, what would your advice be to someone that's listening to this and is like, hey, I got invited to this DAO. They wanted me to contribute an NFT or some ETH to it. What questions do you ask them to make sure that they're doing the legal legwork on the back end and make sure they stay compliant?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's great to learn a bit more about it. I do think that you want to walk into these things with eyes wide open and just be aware of those of the risks. Oftentimes the risks are the greatest for the folks that are pulling together the project as opposed to somebody that's participating. And, and everything, look, we're in a crypto bull run. Everything is looking fantastic at this point. Doesn't seem to be an end in sight, but, at some point the music does stop. And if the music does stop and folks get hurt, then that's when people exercise their rights. And that's when these things become more and more important. So in our view, and it's a little bit like what Coinbase did in the US when it came to digital assets, they weren't the first exchange on the market. There was Mt. Gox, there was a handful of other exchanges in the US, but they went through the laborious process, they being Coinbase, of dotting I's and crossing T's so that digital assets can not just work in a gray area, but actually work for the mainstream. And because of their efforts and the efforts of other exchanges that followed the same path, like Gemini and Kraken, a whole bunch of others, now digital assets are a thing, right? They're an asset class. They're publicly traded companies that are dealing with digital assets. We want DAOs to exist for the long run. So we want to figure out the right path forward. We want to make the arguments so that we can hopefully have DAOs that have more than 100 people in them. We want to make sure that the tech is built and is secure so that people can feel confident if they're participating in DAOs. And we want to take steps to make it easier and easier to set these up. That's why we put a lot of effort into new legislation that's coming out of Wyoming, where you will be able to actually set up a DAO. So in July this year in Wyoming, you can set up something called XYZ DAO. You can hopefully lower the cost of setting them up too, which should help all these new emerging DAO projects and initiatives to kind of get their ducks in a row if they want. And hopefully we can continue to see this new entity structure continue to flourish and grow.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm curious. I just don't know the answer to this question. When you're doing it as an LLC, what's the legal ramifications of actually holding NFTs and or cryptocurrency? Like on the venture side, you can only hold up to 20% of your fund in digital assets, and then you have to, become an RIA. How does that work on the LLC side?
Yeah. So, NFTs are commodities, so you can purchase commodities and hold them. So that makes it a little bit easier to handle. But in many ways, the same types of rules apply. So if you're dealing with digital assets or you're dealing with commodities, the applicable laws will apply. But the nice thing is, though, is that you can interact with more traditional organizations and entities. So, we've spoken to some teams recently that are focused on protocol level DAOs that want to get organized. They want to set up a legal entity. They want that legal entity to have a treasury. They want that treasury to be able to pay taxes, to have a tax number. And they even want that DAO, this organized part of a DeFi protocol, begin to engage in really basic things like M&A transactions. They want to acquire teams that may want to help out, or they want to pay people as independent contractors. So the nice thing about kind of pegging a DAO into some existing legal entity is you can begin to hopefully have answers to lots of these questions. And there's still some gray areas just because folks haven't weighed in, or, there needs to be some more thought and deliberation related to it. But at least you now have a framework to begin to have those conversations.
Yeah. Awesome. So this has been great background. I would love to jump into the creation of the LAO. The LAO was the first one before Flamingo, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Who started these, both Flamingo and the LAO?
So we pulled them together. The concept with the LAO was really to reboot the DAO itself. So the DAO, as pre-mentioned before, was a really fascinating experiment that happened pretty early on in the Ethereum ecosystem. And it was a spectacular failure. Folks from around the globe pulled together capital. And the concept was that early Ethereum supporters and backers would be able to identify the next great projects that are coming in the space. And the DAO itself could provide capital, in the form of grants or in the form of an investment to hopefully help that project get going. Due to a technical issue, it blew up, and it led to a lot of drama in the Ethereum ecosystem, led to a hard fork of Ethereum, which still to this day, has left some scars on many early folks that were part of Ethereum. And then people had PTSD out. They just didn't really want to dive in anymore. They were a little bit concerned about some of the security issues related to it. The US government weighed in and raised some questions about the DAO itself, which I think also clouded things.
The ecosystem needed some time to develop and build out some of the fundamentals, like some of these building blocks that we've seen with some of the token standards and the DeFi Lego blocks, if you will, to really give DAOs the full utility that they deserve. So I think the timing has just been ripe at this point for DAOs to emerge.
And then what year did the LAO start, actually?
Yeah, it started just over a year ago. So,
oh, wow.
You know, we started, so just over a year ago, we spent a couple months kind of with our heads down, thinking about how we could use the tools that we have in OpenLaw to peg a DAO into the US more fulsomely. And then we also built up some more technology, both on the smart contract side and the dApp side, to pull it all together. It launched in last April, so just over a year ago. And we opened it up to the public, and a whole bunch of folks flooded in. A lot of folks that joined were people that had started major protocols in the space. Folks like Joe Lubin and Sergey from Chainlink are members. Christoph, who started the original DAO, is also a member. And then a lot of other people that have been either passionate about Ethereum, Bitcoin, or this notion of DAOs off the bat.
I think, you know, beyond just people who've built out protocols, there are also people who use them quite a bit too. So like people who are LPs for different DeFi protocols, just folks who are actively engaged in the ecosystem tend to join the DAOs too, which is a little bit different. So people who are 24/7 plugged in, I think, is a good portion of the membership as well.
Gotcha. And then what happens? One of the things that I think is just so fascinating is that there's this mystique around behind the scenes of what happens when you're a member, you know, like people don't know. And I had the same thing with Flamingo before I joined. You have an idea of what might be going on, but what is it when someone joins and they're accepted? What does the onboarding look like? What do they join? What do they actually see for the first time? Is it chat? Is it message boards? Like what's going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, it's one of those things where we have a pretty nice DAP, like process in the DAP where folks can contribute and they get their operating documents and they're, you know, they're onboarded right away. They're in that they, you know, join this Discord, which is very active, all the DAOs really. And so you kind of walk into the belly of the beast where there's channels for possibly every project one could imagine in the NFT or DeFi ecosystem when it comes to both Neptune and the LAO. So, I mean, really the way that most of the conversation and coordination happens is through Discord, I would say. However, we also have weekly calls that, you know, we slate an hour for, but they tend to always go over. We have two calls for the LAO, one for Flamingo. The members come in and talk about, I mean, sometimes it'll just be like shooting the shot a little bit, but a lot of it is discussing different projects and, you know, NFTs. And from there, it's just a good way to coordinate. And beyond that, there are a lot of calls around with different projects, founders, others, just to help, you know, the members learn about different things and make decisions accordingly. So it's a pretty busy group.
Yeah, it's this combination of this off-chain coordination and then on-chain coordination, which I think is pretty fascinating. So there's nobody that's in charge, right? There's no general partner, there's no manager, there's no board. There's nobody that's really fully responsible for it individually. Instead, it's kind of a collective effort. So I think the most interesting parts of DAOs, at least in my experience and going through this a couple of times, it's the beginning. It's right when it boots up and you kind of see this group of folks, some of which may know each other, some of which that don't, and they begin to kind of swarm around this concept. So let's use Flamingo as an example. So when Flamingo started, there was no express purpose outside of let's go look at NFTs. But within the first month, people joined, conversations started, and quickly there was various different theories, hypotheses that folks formed around where this collectively pooled ether should go in terms of acquiring different NFTs. And so that branched into a bunch of different buckets. So that included commissioning artwork from these emerging voices that we were seeing on different platforms, to acquiring old school original NFTs like CryptoPunks and Glyphs, looking at other forms of collectibles like Topshot, diving deep into the metaverse, and beginning to just kind of take it from there. So it's pretty organic in its nature. And I think that may add to some of the mystery, which is, you know, how are decisions being made? But in reality, it's this network of all the different members that are deep into the space, super passionate about this particular topic, that are just bouncing ideas off one another. And when an idea sticks, you can kind of see consensus forming either in Discord or on a call or otherwise, and then action is collectively taken. So when it came to the LAO, you know, we noticed pretty quickly that we were identifying projects before where traditional venture funds were or crypto funds were. So we were, you know, writing the first check or sending the first amount of ETH to support these projects before other funds were able to go through their process or before they were able to identify it as a good opportunity. And
that's amazing.
On the, Yeah, and on the NFT side, it wasn't that dissimilar, right? So A, it was formed in October of last year. So before all this NFT growth and interest kind of accelerated, and it was pretty clear, at least amongst the members, once there was enough discussion, you know, where some value would accrue. So it's not surprising, right? When there's a lot of really amazing interest right now in early NFTs, like as an example, Christie's is going to be auctioning off some CryptoPunks this week, right? Which, who would have thought that, you know, 6 months ago? Well, it turns out that this collective hive mind that we have in Flamingo kind of knew something was up there. You know, they may not have known that Christie's was going to auction them off, but they had this kind of instinct. Mm-hmm. This hive mind kind of created an instinct that it would be smart to begin to collect these types of NFTs. So the process is super organic. You know, it's not top down. It's very bottom up. And I think that there's some really interesting advantages to that.
This is just where a ton of value shows itself because, you know, on the venture side, just to give you some sense of kind of, you know, what we do at True is, you know, and this applies to all venture firms that I've seen. I'd love to know if there's any out there that are doing it differently, but, you know, you have a series of partners and those partners have areas of expertise and there's certain people that prefer consumer internet and some health and wellness and, you know, some hardware related projects. And then there'll be a few partners that are into crypto, but you know, you don't get the scale. And there's just so many projects going on at any given point in time, it's impossible to see everything. So even if you had four or five partners that are full-time crypto, you're just not going to, you know, see it early enough. By the time, you always miss something. So what you're saying here, which I think is really fascinating, is you have, like with Flamingo, for example, just a collection of people that are all, you know, quote unquote partners in this. And they're seeing that they're bringing the collective wisdom of all in real time, all via like chat collaboration versus a once a week partner meeting. Right. And so there's this like real time bubbling up of new projects that is so much faster than traditional venture. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I think that's completely true. And I think when you expand kind of beyond, let's say, five, you know, 2 to 10 partners, like lots of venture firms have, and I know there's some outliers there, right, where there's more. But when you have kind of a group of 60 to 100 folks that are sifting through the information of the internet, and particularly when they're focused on crypto, we feel like we haven't had many blind spots. So while lots of crypto VC funds, as an example, missed NFTs completely, by the time kind of this emergence of NFTs has exploded over the past couple months, on the Lao side, you know, we had steadily built up a portfolio of prominent and now prominent NFT projects that we backed. And in some examples, we were the first folks to back them. You know, we were the ones that kind of spotted them and said, hey, this is a team that should get the support that they need. And same thing on the DeFi side, you know, we're still beginning to see lots of interesting projects emerge in DeFi. But it's hard to know, you know, which ones are going to be strong. It's hard to know if the team's going to be good. But when you have, you know, 60 to 100 people that are sifting through, you know, some people are looking at the smart contracts. Some people may know the team. Some people can do quick reference checks. Some people, you know, may not, you know, have that type of insider knowledge, but can at least weigh in on whether directionally it feels the same. Some people may have had this need in their day-to-day life. So they know. It's almost like a little bit like user testing. Like they've been looking for something to solve this problem for them. So you kind of get this whole mix that enables you to move pretty quick.
That's really the beauty of these DAOs, I think, is like this, you know, hive mind of people who are from different parts of the world with different life experience, different professional experience, personal experience, and they can kind of come together and share that collective experience and make decisions based on that. And yeah, I mean, just highlighting that point about blind spots, I mean, the crypto ecosystem just moves so quickly, and there's just new developments, new projects, both, you know, on the venture side, you know, whether it be DeFi, infrastructure tooling, NFTs, social community tokens, all these things. And it's frankly impossible to be an expert in any one domain, let alone all of them. So kind of, it's been an incredible learning process for myself, and I think many of the other members, where they may not have that exposure on the blockchain infrastructure stack, but are learning a ton from other individuals who do and who really understand those pain points and can really sift through the projects based on their developer experience, for example. So that's kind of, you know, this knowledge share has been pretty incredible, I think, for a lot of
people.
People just have fun. Yeah. I mean, I don't know I don't know if you want to talk on the NFT side, Pri, but about the alien and kind of what's emerging.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask that question. Pri, you got to tell us the alien story.
There's a lot. So I guess it's kind of crazy to think about now since there's aliens going for 7-8 million. But you know, this is very headliny at the time. And I think early to mid-January, Flamingo came together in the matter of, I want to say, 15, 20 minutes, came together and decided to purchase the alien on Friday, Saturday morning. And so they did so for about 750,000, which was kind of crazy. And there was a lot of, again, like I said, headlines around that at the time. Kind of was a great opportunity. And so a lot of members and Flamingo ended up purchasing that really on a whim. And that, I think, in many ways kicked off a lot of what we're seeing now. I mean, maybe not, but it was definitely pretty exciting for us. And now that we have actually acquired this alien punk, you know, a member put together a Twitter page around it. It has its own distinct, hilarious personality and engages with other punk accounts. You know, a couple members decided to create like a 3D rendering of this alien punk in a metaverse. And so it's just been walking around Somnium space in this 3D body, talking to people. It also has a Zoom interface. So if you wanted to do a Zoom interview with the alien, you could. I mean, beyond that, you know, there's so that's the really kind of interesting thing about Flamingo is beyond just acquiring the NFTs, there's a lot of interesting product and experiential things that are emerging. So whether that be creating a digital museum in a metaverse to display the works, creating like a, you know, this character out of it. We've also been contemplating like an online interaction between the punks. So I've been calling it reality Twitter, given my years of Bravo TV watching. But really the idea there is you could kind of create these punk avatars that have a general story arc, but they can kind of riff and banter on Twitter. And you as a third party can either participate if you're like a punk avatar or just follow along on this like faux drama that's emerging and the story that exists. So we like kind of created a punks writers room, which hopefully will, you know, include more people who are interested in kind of creating these story arcs on Twitter. So I think there's plenty that could be done out even outside of punks, where we can start creating even DAOs around specific NFTs and crowdfund personalities for this NFT. And really we're at the cutting edge there. We have the members have definitely thought about some other ideas here too, which we're looking forward to launching as well. So would that be coming together and creating Flamingo branded NFTs for the community? I think that there's just a ton of possibility now.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. One of the things that I've seen happen over the last few months is Flamingo has kind of cemented itself. It's just known as the hippest, kind of coolest collection DAO of people that are collecting NFTs. And you're seeing that start to be reflected back in culture. Like it's starting to show up, like the Mii Bits, for example. There's a t-shirt with a flamingo on it. That is not by accident, right? Like it's because they decided like this is a cool enough group that we want to do a little tip of the hat to the organization. Do you think that there is a world where Flamingo as a DAO is almost its own brand in a sense? I mean, it is its own brand, but I mean, a brand that is a commercial brand in any way?
I think so. I don't know if this is going to be completely up to the members and what they aim to do, but there has been discussion about, you know, having a generative art drop with Flamingo that's, you know, curated by artists that Flamingo selects. You know, there's definitely ideas there. I mean, whether there'll be like Flamingo swag or a Flamingo media company, who knows? But I there's definitely something to the brand. And I thought the Mii Bits thing was pretty incredible. I was like pretty blown away that they, you know, did the tip of the hat to Flamingo, which is special, I think.
I'm so stoked I minted one of those, by the way.
Oh, you did? Nice.
Yeah.
So lucky.
I'm bumped.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little user-generated, so it's where the members want to take the organization. And the nice way that it's set up, not only, you know, has the structuring work been done like we were talking about before, but we also help and support folks on ways to improve things technically, right? So if the members want to set up another DAO, that can be done really quickly. If they want to put together something like Pri was just mentioning in terms of doing curated art blocks drops, we can do that too. So it's not a static organization. It's really dynamic. And I think that also points to some of the powerful things about DAOs. You don't need to just be set up for a particular purpose. They can kind of grow and expand and evolve in different ways.
So how does the, you know, we've talked a lot about, okay, there's a really cool project, an alien comes up, members get together. How do you decide which piece is used for the DAO funds? Like, was the Alien 100% purchased out of the DAO funds, or was there some members that went off and bought it on their own? And then how do you have to guarantee that the kind of the DAO eats first? Like in traditional venture, like I'll give you some context on my side of things, like we cannot personally invest in anything until the fund has actually officially quote unquote passed on it. So, you know, we always make sure that our venture fund is the first one to have a look. How does that work with such a fluid, flexible organization?
Yeah. So when on the first question with the Alien, that was a bit contentious because at the time there wasn't that many high priced NFT purchases. So that purchase of $750,000 in ETH, which sounds quaint now, was actually, you know, opened up a big discussion internally inside of Flamingo. So what happened was we pretty much set up a very quick, almost like pleaser DAO like structure before it was even known as something like a pleaser DAO, where people rapidly pulled together capital. Flamingo put in half the capital for it. Some members did individually. And then we made a run at it and acquired it. And the thought is, and there's lots of conversations around this too, the Alien itself may have a DAO around it. So that's kind of how the Alien DAO came together. In terms of other pieces, the way it's structured, when everybody joins, they're not joining as fiduciaries. It's not like a general partner, limited partner structure. And in the US, you can waive fiduciary duties. That's completely fine. There's some constraints on it. You can't waive the ability of good faith and fair dealing. What I like to say is you can't kind of be a bastard to one another. And the members have the right to boot anybody out, quote, rage kick them. So not quit, but actually kick them out. And what that means is that, you know, if people are interested in a particular project that they learn about from participating in Flamingo, let's say they're interested in, they see a bunch of folks in Flamingo interested in CryptoPunks and they want to pick up one for themselves, there's nothing that's going to preclude them from doing that. The one kind of rule that seems to be emerging is that you can't front run the DAO. So if you learn about an opportunity specifically from Flamingo or from Flamingo conversations and try to cut Flamingo out, well, that's probably going to result in you getting kicked out of the crew. So we're still evolving some of these conversations, but it seems to work pretty well. And it also enables Flamingo to kind of have a force magnifying effect. So if you look at some of the larger NFT projects, Flamingo may have a decent number of them, but collectively amongst its memberships, it probably has more, which is pretty interesting as well. So there is like a little element of Wall Street bets in Flamingo and frankly also the Lab.
Yeah, it's crazy. How do you decide when to sell something? I mean, the Flamingo owns hundreds of punks now, just all fantastic works. If you look in the catalog, which is all available online that people can kind of browse through. Let's just say you have a run on the bank and 10 members are like, okay, I'm done. I'm going to rage quit. Like, how do you get liquidity there to cash people out? And how do you decide when to sell certain pieces?
So it's up to the members too. So we're getting to the point where folks are thinking about that. The first piece that Flamingo owns that it's going to sell is going to come up. That's going to go through a major auction house that hasn't been fully announced. You'll hear a little bit more about that soon. But here, I think there's a rough split in opinion. One is that the members should just vote on what to sell. And if there's any profits, it should just get distributed based on ownership. The second concept that people are interested in exploring is the representing all the interests in Flamingo as a token in some capacity. So you could imagine, and I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done and some regulatory challenges as well, but you can imagine at some point Flamingo, the Lao, and Neptune all being tokenized in different ways as well. And then I think you kind of have the complete picture, right? You have a collective vehicle and you have the interest in that collective vehicle potentially tokenized and hopefully tokenized in a way that works under US law.
Crazy. So wait, that's nuts. Yeah. So you could do cross DAO holdings. So Flamingo could take a position in the Lao and the other way around at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. And the Lao is kind of like the mothership and it and its members actually incubated Flamingo. So it does have a small piece of the Lao does have a small piece of Flamingo. It also has a small piece of Neptune. It's contributed Ether to both of those DAOs, but you can imagine a world where these different organizations, you know, do have tokenized interests and potentially tradable tokenized interests in one another.
You could also say, I'm going to just roll any distributions right back into taking additional ownership in the DAO. That would be another interesting way to say, okay, I don't want the profits right now, but I want to up my stake in this project in the DAO.
Yeah. And then the liquidity point that there has been, you know, in these three separate DAOs, some folks that either purchased a much larger interest and they want to kind of dial that back. And what's tended to happen is that those interests are transferred between members. So at this point, and again, we're in a bull run, we know that there seems to be more internal demand for, you know, upping their ownership interest or kind of expanding their stake in the DAO than there is in exiting. But if there's going to be an exit at some point, I think that the members at that point will come up with some creative solutions to begin to manage that.
So do you both see this as, I mean, just putting my entrepreneurial hat on for a second, I can imagine that almost every governance token out there wants something like this in terms of functionality. You're going to build upon this. You've already done fantastic work for these handful of ones that are more or less, you know, controlled or launched by the founding team. Is this something you productize eventually and say, okay, anyone can come to us? And I guess it'd be horrible. Well, the only thing I can say is like a Rocket Lawyer or something like that's a horrible example, but making it super turnkey so that someone could say, hey, I just want to come in, click a few buttons, have you manage the entire back office for my DAO. Will that be the future for you both?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where we're going. We've been working on a new smart contract framework, a DAO framework that we're calling the Tribute DAO framework, and we're about to pull the wrapping off of that. What that will look like is the costs for administering and adding different features to a DAO will go down. It's not going to be perfect, but it's definitely a huge step in the right direction. And we're going to continue to kind of plow forward. So the WoW network is not just going to be three DAOs in a couple months. It'll be probably closer to seven or eight. And then months after that, you know, 10 to 20 plus. And at that point, I imagine that we'll start to layer in some more turnkey solutions to it. And I think there's some advantages to it, to doing it a little bit more curated. You A, can see the pain points a bit more. B, you can start to shore up the tech underneath it before you kind of let the lids off and let more folks come in. I do worry about the Rocket Lawyer is a great company. They've done a lot of great work to lower the cost of legal services across the United States. I still think there's a bit more work that needs to be done to really streamline some of those operational pieces, like you were mentioning before. If we go back to that analogy that I used before, and folks may disagree with it, but I think it works somewhat well. You have a Reddit with a bank account and these rules. Well, in many ways, what we're serving as is almost like the mod, like a professionalized mod. And because you have a bank account, there's just a lot more operational costs and challenges that need to get addressed. And hopefully through this more curated experience, we're able to really build tools that make that efficient and streamlined, and hopefully can make these very productive.
Yeah, I feel like once we go through the trenches, through a few of these, we'll be able to just kind of have a turnkey operational approach as well, which is like, as Aaron mentioned, we were talking about value dependent on the community, just requires more attention in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, yeah, anytime you involve finance, it seems like not everything is fully defined yet on the tax side. And I mean, it's like with all this stuff, there's so many broken pieces in crypto right now on the reporting side. I can imagine it's extra handholding. I'm curious to wrap things up. Two things I'd like to ask you both. For people that are listening to this and are saying, okay, these things sound cool. The barrier to entry in some of these can be quite substantial in terms of capital required to get into some of these DAOs. Can you give me maybe your top five DAOs? It doesn't have to be ones that you work with, but just things that you think that are out there that are interesting, and not in a way that's saying people should go give them money, but they may want to go check out their Discords, kick the tires, get to know the folks, because these are fantastic for communities for learning. And so, you know, I just always encourage people, if they've heard of these things, they should try and join. And not join the actual project yet, but join their Discords and start meeting people and figuring out how they work. Are there a few that you would recommend? And then also, because you are so deep in the NFT space, and I love seeing your Discord chatter about new projects, what are your top 3 to 5 kind of NFT projects that you're excited about these days?
Yeah, so on the top 5 DAOs, and Pri, I don't know if you want to also jump in. Obviously, the 3 that we put together, the LAO, Flamingo, and Neptune are super interesting. I think PleaserDAO is super fascinating too, this kind of collectively pooling capital for a short period of time and acquiring an NFT. I think that's, we saw a little bit of that internally, like we mentioned before, and it's cool to see some other projects playing around with that. And also, I do like some of these newer DAOs that are forming around a particular ecosystem and community. Things like SquiggleDAO is a good example there, where people are joining by presenting the artwork that they have, in this instance, generative art. So those are a couple DAOs that I think are definitely worth checking out. I don't know if you had any others.
It is interesting seeing the specific DAOs that emerge. They haven't quite DAOified yet, but I know they intend to. Is Friends with Benefits or FWB? It's kind of like a community of people with shared interests and want to talk crypto or culture. And so I think I like what they're doing, and I've been active in that commission Discord.
Hey, Preet, can you explain that one for a second? Because I think that one's also very cool. Can you explain what a token Discord is?
Yeah. So, you know, basically you could go over to Uniswap or some sort of DEX and use your Ethereum to swap for this community token. In this case, it's FWB. You take that and click on the Discord link. There is a bot created by Collabland, and they're a fantastic team that the LAO has also supported. Read your MetaMask the MetaMask wallet to make sure that you have enough of that said token. I believe for FWB, you have to have about 50 FWB to enter in the Discord. And then, you know, once you hook into that bot, you join the community. And then, you know, there's calls every week. There are even like purchase keys based in that domain specific, you know, social token, community token. And then there's also just channels and people that you can meet once you enter that Discord. So there's a couple of those that I think are emerging, like Seed Club and others that are playing around with that. And I think that's pretty interesting because they're kind of starting more from the community token and then to DAOs eventually. So I think pretty fascinating. Even like, you know, although Alien DAO is still TBD, I think, you know, what some of the members are thinking about creating DAOs around specific NFTs is pretty interesting. Like I'd imagine you could, you know, create storylines based on being a holder of or having a say in the specific NFT. Something there, like creating personalities and plots around that, I think would be interesting. Emily Siegel also, I think she might think about DAOifying, but she put her novel on Mirror or crowdfunded her novel on Mirror, and there's for a novel token, and you could probably enter a Discord with that token at some point, I'm sure. And so it'll like give early access to her novel.
How about the NFT side? I'm curious, what are you all loving and holding these days?
Art blocks.
Art blocks. 1,000%. Yeah.
I mean, I'm in the same camp. Every time they drop something new, I'm like, oh, it's so beautiful. And then like a week later comes something new, and I'm like, that is also beautiful. It's like, you have to have one of everything they drop. They're amazing.
Completely. Yeah, I'd say art blocks and just channeling kind of my interest and also some of the other members. I do think folks are thinking about this intersection between NFT and gaming pretty heavily. The thought and hypothesis being, you know, people of collecting are collecting, you know, beautiful pieces of digital art or other forms of collectibles, but it's nice to kind of use something a little bit more productively. So there's been a whole bunch of really interesting NFT gaming projects that are kind of emerging, which I think folks are going to get more geeked out about over, you know, the next 3 to 6 months. Because it's, you can own a character and play it. And, you know, somebody, it has a really nice complement to some of the mechanics if you're a gamer or played a lot of games.
That's why I thought MeBits was just so prescient. Like the fact that they nailed and released a 3D model of these little characters just as all this stuff was coming online. And clearly they started this project like, you know, over a year ago. And it was, the timing was perfect. To be able to take these, and I could just see, you know, you think they're collectible today, wait till there's a universe that you can use them in, and they're kind of shown as like this like way to be, you know, if you have a Meebus character, it'll be like this like almost like a status thing in some sense. It could be crazy.
Yeah, and that's already happening. You know, there's a metaverse that the LAO and Flamingo backed called Webiverse, and it makes it really easy to import an NFT into, you know, this emerging digital world of metaverse. And within a matter of, you know, hours after MeBits was announced and after some MeBits kind of got sold, it instantaneously got ported into these metaverses, which is super cool just to think about.
Yeah, that's super cool. The intersection of metaverse and NFTs, it's starting to hit, but I think, you know, that's going to be the next phase of where NFTs go, this experience in a digital world. I guess another NFT project, which is a little more under the radar, but I really, really love the art that they have on there, is Folia. It's like folia.app. I'd recommend checking that one out. They're kind of doing some clever experimentation around specific collectibles, and I just love the quality of the art on there, too.
Well, this has been a great episode. I certainly learned a ton. I was selfishly wanting to do this for just so I could get up to speed on this, but I think this is going to help a lot of people. Thank you both. And where can people find you on crypto Twitter and other places?
Yeah, Twitter is always great. AWRIGH01.
And I'm Frida Sion.
Awesome. I will link all that stuff up in the show notes. Thank you both. All right. That's it for this episode. Real quick though, my take and thoughts on this stuff. You know, DAOs are just fascinating. Being a part of the Flamingo DAO has been really eye-opening, and watching them execute at the speed in which they do and how they're surfacing new ideas and new NFTs that we should be tracking, the organization that happens all on these chat rooms and Discord and on these Zoom calls, it is just a well-oiled machine, but yet there's really no one in charge. So it's a really cool new model, as long as you get the right people in the DAOs. You know, if you get some bad actors, you want to figure out a way to quickly kind of prune and kick those people out to make sure you always have just a really positive environment. It's not to say that you can't disagree. It's just that you don't want to have any lasting toxicity. I think that could really be the downfall of some of these DAOs if they're not careful. So yeah, I would recommend going out, getting on crypto Twitter, following some of these DAOs, and then just seeing which other ones are popping up. There's new DAOs popping up all the time, and they're starting up new Discords. You can jump in. You can contribute time, sometimes resources, sometimes Ethereum if the DAO is set up to purchase something. That's probably the best way to learn more and probably where I'd start. All right, one last thing. If you enjoyed this episode or there's any other episodes in our past catalog that you thought to yourself, wow, that was killer, I learned a ton, the number one thing you can do, without a doubt, is just to send it to 2 or 3 friends. It really helps us spread the word, gets more people listening, and we get even better guests on the show. Well, that's it for now. Thanks so much. Take care.